This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
The prosecution of Special Operations Chief Edward Gallagher has gotten a lot of coverage in the mainstream press, in part because the president has been tweeting about it. It's also a story closely followed by the Navy Times, an independent news outlet that covers, well, the Navy, and has been breaking scoop after scoop in recent months about alleged problems with the Gallagher prosecution. But now the paper itself is subject to the prying eyes of prosecutors. The Navy Times is part of the Military Times, of which Andrew Tillman is executive editor. Andrew, welcome to On the Media.
Thanks for having me.
We've just heard about the war crimes cases. One of them concerns Chief Gallagher, who faces allegations of horrendous conduct, but is, of course, mounting a defense. Your reporter, Carl Prine, was investigating possible irregularities in the prosecution.
Well, the thrust of his story is that the prosecution may not have turned over all the documents related to the investigation that, by law, they're supposed to turn over to the defense attorneys, what the lawyers call Brady material. And Carl has reported about these documents that existed but were not turned over to the defense, and it really upended the case at a certain point a couple of months ago and raised allegations of whether the Navy prosecutors or the investigators from NCIS were being straight about their approach to the case.
And those documents have been leaked to Prine, so many leaks, in fact, that the judge, Captain Aaron Rue, issued a gag order, which I gather did not have much of an effect.
Yes, this case really involves a lot of different defendants and a lot of different attorneys, and Carl continued to get a pretty steady stream of confidential documents from his sources, and that was obviously a source of real frustration to the judge and the prosecutors.
So then, about a week and a half ago, Carl Prine got an email.
Well, he got an email that struck him as a little bit odd because it was from the head prosecutor, and he was usually in the habit of getting his responses from the Navy public affairs officials out in San Diego. The email also contained a kind of an unusual-looking emblem in the signature line of a bald eagle, and he thought that looked a little bit odd. The prosecutor also appears to have sent this same sort of tracking device to all of the attorneys. And as Carl began talking to some of the defense attorneys in the case, we realized that it wasn't just a static PDF graphic element, that it was actually a piece of coding, what our tech people call a beacon, that was pointing back to a server in San Diego. And when they did the forensics on this, they found that this was designed to go in when Carl opened the email and to extract the IP address for the Navy Times computer system and to send that IP address back to this server in San Diego.
And for what purpose? Is that clear?
I think what was going on here is that they were trying to keep track of the documents that they were sending out to the attorneys to find out who was leaking them. And these devices allow for someone who's on the other end of this to track who these emails may be forwarded to on a second and third level, so that anyone who opens the document, that IP address will ping back to this server. I think the reason that they were including this in the email to Carl is because they wanted to match that up with the IP addresses that they were seeing the documents being forwarded to.
Now, one way of looking at this is that it amounts to a warrantless search of a news organization, no less, but in any event, patently illegal under the Fourth Amendment. But the military prosecutor, says, oh, no, it's all kosher, strictly routine. How does he assert that it is routine?
Well, I mean, that's still a little bit unclear at this point. This is still a topic of significant litigation in the court case. There's a hearing going on. You know, the Navy, they call it an audit device, and they say it's part of an authorized and legal investigation. We do know that this device extracted the IP address of our system and relayed it back to a server in San Diego. We are an independent organization. We're a private sector company, and you can't just extract our information from our system without our permission and without a subpoena.
This whole tracking code is news to me. I'd never heard of it before. You've been in touch with the Reporters Committee on Freedom of the Press, and it was news to them too.
Yes, they told me that this was the first time that they were aware of this kind of technology being used in tracking a reporter's activities. If the Navy had sought through legal channels to subpoena Carl as a witness and sought to compel him to reveal his confidential sources, he would have said simply no. I mean, we've seen examples of that many times in the past, of reporters refusing efforts to get them to reveal their confidential sources. Carl would have been more than happy to stand up for that as well. What I think is particularly insidious about this is that they sought to undermine his ability to even have that choice. And they sought to find out who his sources were in this secret, potentially illegal way. And that's really, you know, troubling. I think it should be troubling for all journalists.
Now, ordinarily, I suppose, the defense would rush to Judge Rue and demand sanctions or some other relief on the basis of prosecutorial misconduct. But it turns out that Rue apparently was aware of this, in fact, possibly even suggested it.
Some Navy officials have told us that this was an investigation that was authorized by the judge and that it was conducted legally. Now, I think that as this has gone on and it's drawn a lot of negative attention on the Navy, I think that there is some backpedaling going on and questions have been raised about whether the judge intended the investigation to be conducted in this way, using this kind of tactic, and that's all being hashed out in court.
The chief of staff of the Navy's Defense Service Offices, David G. Wilson, has demanded some answers as to how it could justify this kind of tracking episode. What's the status of that, and what does it suggest for this case?
This was a memo from basically the chief defense attorney of the U.S. Navy to the chief prosecutor of the U.S. Navy. Grave ethical concerns, I think, was the phrase he used. He described this as a Pandora's box that had been opened, and he suggested that this was putting not only this case at risk, but also all cases across the entire Navy criminal justice system at risk, because it raises questions about whether the defense attorneys are having their computer systems monitored, and that would be a direct violation of attorney-client privilege.
Apart from how spooky it is, now your reporter has found himself thrust into the middle of the very story he's covering. Has that affected his approach to the ongoing story?
Well, we made a decision last week when this all happened that Carl was going to step aside from coverage of this particular aspect of the case, meaning the email tracking device. So we've had some other people on our staff handle the reporting of this. We've worked with our tech team and our attorneys to conduct an audit of our internal computer system to make sure that there's nothing that's putting our system in jeopardy for the long term. I do worry about the widespread perception that it has been and the chilling effect that that might have on our ability to assure our most important sources of confidentiality and really inhibit our ability to continue to do the kind of independent reporting that we've been doing.
You know, I have to tell you, Andrew, that early in my career, around 1980, I had written some stories about the Philadelphia Phillies and illegal drugs and wound up testifying at a hearing. Of course, I said, my testimony is what I wrote, and that's all I'm prepared to say. But our newspaper was so small and under-resourced, and by the way, not very good, that the only person to write the story about my testimony was me. And so we just left it out altogether, which was Not the right decision.
It's certainly been disruptive for us to have to, find other people to get up to speed on this and to keep Carl, who is clearly our subject matter expert on all of this, to keep him out of it. I mean, it's been one of the many disruptive things that this has involved over the past 10 days.
We started out noting how deeply the Navy Times and the Military Times as a whole has been reporting on the Gallagher prosecution and how high profile the case has become. And this concerns not so much your part in the story as our previous segment, but is it clear to you whether your readers in general and the veterans community in general think that a pardon from the president in the Gallagher case or these other war crimes cases is appropriate?
Well, it's always very difficult to characterize the views of millions of veterans across the country. But I think that generally what we have heard is that most people are very supportive of enforcing actual and proven violations of war crimes, because those kinds of crimes make the job of service members who are deployed overseas a lot more difficult. While there may be a small minority of people who think that we shouldn't be enforcing war crimes laws and we shouldn't be placing restrictions on what service members do overseas, I think those people, for the most part, are not very familiar with the military and don't really understand the real circumstances that service members face when they're deployed.
Andrew, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Andrew Tillman is executive editor of the Military Times. We asked the Navy for comment, and it replied with a written statement denying that its tracking code constituted an illegal search or that the newspaper was targeted. Quote, "The focus of the investigation is to determine who is violating the judicial order by releasing protected information that can undermine a fair trial and negatively impact the military justice system." Coming up, the surprising history of the regulation of war. This is On the Media.